This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. Higher petrol prices and bigger mortgage repayments are on the way, with the Reserve Bank expected to lift interest rates tomorrow, just weeks before the temporary cut to the fuel excise ends. The federal government's promising to address the soaring cost of living pressures in next month's budget. Ahead of that, there's some relief in sight for almost 5 million Australians, with welfare payments set to receive their biggest boost in decades. Annie Guest reports.
If you're a single-aged pensioner, you're set to get an extra $2 a day from this month, a rise driven by increases in the Consumer Price Index. Here's Treasurer Jim Chalmers.
Well, it's really important that our payments keep up with inflation. That's why they're indexed twice a year. And every little bit helps. You know, this indexation will be particularly big this month because inflation is particularly challenging.
The Age Disability Support Pension and Carer Payment are rising by $38.90 a fortnight for singles and $58.80 a fortnight for couples. Job seeker recipients aged over 22 without children will get an extra $25.70 a fortnight, taking job seeker to $677 a fortnight, including an energy supplement.
And we know that it won't solve every problem for everybody, but it's important that we try and make sure that those payments keep up. That's what the indexation is about. It will be welcome, even as we acknowledge that times will still be tough for a lot of people.
The federal government says these are the largest indexation increase to payments in more than 30 years for allowances and 12 years for pensions. Edwina McDonald is the acting CEO of ACOS.
It's really just a drop in the ocean at this point. And as the non-discretionary inflation is higher than the CPI, they're still going backwards in terms of what they can afford to buy at the moment.
It's a long way short of the 35% plus increase in Social Security payments that ACOS has been calling for.
Currently, JobSeeker's at $46 a day, youth allowance is at $38 a day. And what we need in order to bring it up to the poverty line is to bring it up to at least $70 a day.
However, there's no indication the government's about to do that. And Treasurer Jim Chalmers is still refusing to extend the temporary cut to the fuel excise, which ends later this month.
I've said to you many times over the last 6 months or so that it would be too expensive to continue that petrol price relief indefinitely. I think Australians understand that we've inherited a budget which is heaving with $1 trillion in Liberal Party debt, and that means some difficult decisions, including this one.
But he has written to the competition watchdog, the ACCC, asking it to make sure that petrol retailers don't take advantage of the expiry of the fuel excise reduction to penalise consumers.
Annie Guest reporting. Data shows that hundreds of thousands of people who borrowed heavily during the pandemic housing boom using low deposits have become trapped with mortgages they can't refinance. The situation's about to get worse, with the Reserve Bank expected to lift the official interest rate again by half a percentage point at its monthly meeting tomorrow. Nassim Kidem reports.
Madeline and Jacqueline Darkovska are in over their heads with debt.
It's been really hard. I haven't been able to purchase a lot of food for myself or even help like pay for my car bill, mortgage.
The twins are among a growing number of Australians who are trapped with a mortgage and unable to refinance.
I've recently just lost my job, or my hours have actually been cut as I'm casual. And so my mum's actually stepped in to pay or help me pay for my portion of the mortgage.
At the end of 2020, the sisters took out a $360,000 loan to build their dream home on the outskirts of Perth. Their only option without a 10% deposit was to go with a small lender that put them on a high interest rate. Now, with four back-to-back rate rises, their repayments have shot up by $300 a month.
We'll probably either have to sell the house if we can't keep up with the repayments, so it's really scary for us.
As banks impose tougher lending standards and interest rate hikes drive property prices down, Rate City's research director, Sally Tindall, says more Australians will find themselves trapped.
Well, mortgage prison is where you can't refinance, and the main reason that would be is if the equity in your property falls below 20%. Why? Because banks typically will charge refinancers lenders' mortgage insurance, which can run into the tens of thousands of dollars if they're refinancing but don't have that magic 20% deposit.
According to the latest data from banking regulator APRA, in the 6 months through to March this year, the value of new loans written with a deposit size of 20% or less was $112 billion. Rate City estimates this is about 200,000 mortgages. But add to this the people who also can't pass the bank's more stringent tests based on their income and expenses, and Sally Tindall says that figure may well run higher.
The key is not to panic. The key is to put your head down and keep your monthly mortgage repayments up.
Christopher Ladley runs Mortgage Choice Brokers in Elsternwick, Melbourne. He says people borrowed in the expectation that rates wouldn't rise until 2024, as the Reserve Bank had said just 12 months ago.
People are panicking because they're worried about what happens when I roll off a really great fixed rate. And they're worried about what happens as that interest rate reverts to, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6%.
Jacqueline Darkowska says they would never have taken on a mortgage if they hadn't partly been encouraged by the RBA statement that rates would stay low.
Don't sell false hope.
Yep.
You sell the Australian dream, but you rip it out from underneath people.
Homeowner Jacqueline Darkowska, ending that report from Nassim Kadem. Two contentious issues, industrial relations and climate change, are likely to dominate federal parliament as it returns after a months-long break. And following the Jobs and Skills Summit last week, the government will immediately begin revamping IR laws, which the opposition's vowed to fight. In the Senate, Labor's climate change bill is up for debate, but the government's under renewed pressure to do more to stop new coal and gas projects. Political reporter Noor Haider has more.
As politicians touch down in Canberra, reflections on last week's Jobs and Skills Summit were varied.
I think last week really established that we've got a vision for the future, that we've got a lot of work to do, we've got a plan.
Clearly the unions set the agenda and the unions got the outcomes that they wanted.
Good conversations were had, but talk is cheap, so we need to see some outcomes.
But Treasurer Jim Chalmers says it was a success.
This is how first-rate country runs itself, by seeing where there is common ground. Moving forward where we can, but always in the interests of our people.
For Employment and Workplace Relations Minister Tony Burke, that means beginning consultations on expanding multi-employer bargaining. Here's Treasurer Jim Chalmers again.
We want to see more agreement in industrial relations, not more conflict, and we want to see wages growth. And that's why the changes that Tony Burke will be consulting on are so important.
Multi-employer bargaining would allow unions to strike pay deals for workers across multiple employers within the same industry. Coalition frontbencher Michaelia Cash says it could lead to crippling strikes.
Peter Dutton and the Coalition, we will fight this every step of the way if required.
But the body representing small business is open to the idea.
What we're hearing from our members is that some of them are saying that this would be something they would like to look into. Simple as that.
The CEO of the Council of Small Business Organisations Australia, Alexi Boyd, says the current enterprise bargaining system is too complex and something needs to change.
We haven't agreed to anything, but we're coming to the table with an element of goodwill.
But there are clear red lines.
We made ourselves abundantly clear at the Job Summit that we will not support sector-wide bargaining. We will not support anything that is compulsory or requires small businesses to in any way reduce the autonomy that they have in controlling their business.
Climate change is another tricky policy area. Debate on the government's bill to enshrine a 43% emissions reduction target by 2030 begins in the Senate today. The Greens are backing it, while also tabling separate legislation to introduce a climate trigger into environmental approval laws. The Greens' environment spokeswoman is Sarah Hanson-Young.
Our environment is in crisis. It is being damaged significantly by climate change. And any project should have an assessment as to whether it's good for the climate or bad for the climate before it's given any type of environmental approval.
This fortnight-long parliamentary sitting will be the last before Labor hands down its October budget.
Noor Haidar reporting. It's well known that Qantas has been going through difficult times, but staff are now raising concerns about what the recent chaos inside the airline could mean for safety. The national carrier has an enviable safety record globally, but a Four Corners investigation found current and former staff worry decades of outsourcing jobs and cost-cutting may be putting that at risk. Stephen Long reports.
In recent months, Qantas customers have been forced to endure extraordinary rates of flight delays, cancellations and missing bags. Dozens of Qantas insiders have now spoken to Four Corners. To protect their identity, we haven't named them and we've used actors to voice their words. And like this pilot, they say there's much more going on behind the scenes.
We're working longer hours, we're redlining, running at max capacity in a very dynamic, challenging environment. There's a lot that can go wrong.
One of the things that's vital is making sure luggage and cargo are loaded correctly for the right weight distribution. An employee has told us how, in recent times, Qantas has come perilously close to error.
So what should have gone in the front went in the back. What went in the back should have gone in the front. There's a certain way aircraft have to be loaded down below, and it was only realised it was done the wrong way just before the cargo hold was supposed to be closed.
One person who can speak openly about the disruptions is pilot Tony Lucas. He's been flying for Qantas for 27 years and also heads the Pilots Association.
We're seeing them occur across multiple weeks, and ultimately that's where things start to increase in operational complexity. That any one of those things on their own isn't a big deal to deal with, but when you start adding them up all together across multiple flights, that starts to become a concern.
During the pandemic, about a third of Qantas engineers were made redundant. Qantas says it needs fewer engineers than pre-COVID because maintenance requirements are lower, with fewer international flights and older planes retired. But an engineer we interviewed says the cuts have caused great strain.
The planned work for the night, we used to get through it almost every night. Now, the first thing we do is have a look at what work is up to its time limit and has to be done so the plane can fly the next day.
And there's other pressure. Long-haul pilots were told that unless they met the investment case for new planes, Qantas had no choice but to give the work to a new company employing pilots that can provide the cost base we need. It used the same tactic with short-haul pilots.
The stress affiliated with this is underestimated. When you mix a safety-critical role with the threat of losing your job, then it really only ends one way. A mistake will be made, there will be an incident, and there could be devastating consequences as a result. And I believe that Qantas management are underestimating the impact.
When asked about the concerns, Qantas responded that unions were making baseless safety claims to further their industrial agendas. But that doesn't address the worries felt by its own employees.
Stephen Long reporting. From anti-monarchist to prime minister, it's widely assumed Britain's Foreign Secretary Liz Truss will be announced as the Conservative Party's new leader tonight, replacing Boris Johnson. And if so, it means her swearing in by the Queen might be a slightly awkward affair, as Nick Dole reports from London.
Backflips, U-turns, changes of heart, whatever you want to call them, they're all too common in politics. But few British MPs have had to explain their changing views as much as Conservative frontbencher Liz Truss. Here she is as a student politician with the Liberal Democrats calling for the end of the monarchy.
We do not believe that people should be born to rule. And we were filmed asking members of the public what they thought about the monarchy. Do you know what they said? They said, abolish them. We've had enough.
She was just 19 back then and now regrets those comments. More recently, as a Conservative, in the lead-up to the referendum, she argued Britain should stay in the European Union.
But that is why that European market is so precious, because we share the same regulations, we share the same rules.
She now says she's changed her mind and she's a staunch Brexiteer. As Foreign Secretary, it's been her job to work closely with European leaders. But last week, during her campaign to become the next British Prime Minister, she was asked this.
President Macron, friend or foe?
The jury's out, but if I...
The Tory members listening seem to love it, and that's showing up in the polls. While her competitor, former Chancellor Rishi Sunak, is favoured by the wider electorate, Conservative voters prefer Ms Truss, and they're the ones who'll decide via a ballot. If she is successful, she'll have a huge challenge on her hands, fixing a cost-of-living crisis. Britain's facing the prospect of a cold and potentially dark winter caused by skyrocketing energy bills. Speaking on the eve of the leadership announcement, she promised she'd address it, and it's expected she'll try to open more of Britain up to fracking.
Within 1 week, I will make sure there is an announcement on how we are going to deal with the issue of energy bills and of long-term supply to put this country on the right footing for winter.
Rishi Sunak is waiting for the results to be announced, but he wasn't sounding confident in this interview with the BBC.
If you don't win this time, would you ever run again?
Oh, gosh, we've just finished this campaign, Laura, so I need to recover from this one. But I look forward to supporting a Conservative government.
As usual, the Queen is in Balmoral for the summer, and given her mobility issues, it's been decided the incoming Prime Minister will go to see her in Scotland rather than make her come to London. If it's Liz Truss making the journey, she might be hoping the Queen isn't aware of her teenage comments about the monarchy. But this will be the Queen's 15th Prime Minister, and it's likely she's done her research. This is Nick Dole in London reporting for AM.
Authorities in the US state of Mississippi say they can't say when a water crisis gripping the capital, Jackson, will be resolved. Tens of thousands of people are without safe drinking water after flooding damaged a water treatment plant. But critics argue it's just the latest in a series of problems driven by inequality. Here's North America correspondent Jade McMillan.
When word got around Jackson of major damage to a local water treatment plant, Brooke Floyd did what she could to try to make life easier for her family.
I filled my bathtub full of water. It took about, I think, about 2 hours to fill it with water before we lost complete water. And I did that so we would have the ability to flush our toilets. And then we were using bottled water and jugs of water to wash up.
Almost a week after supply was cut off to the city of more than 150,000 people, officials say water pressure has started to improve across large parts of Jackson. But it's still not safe to drink, and the administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, Deanne Criswell, has told CNN it's not yet clear when that will change.
And so it's going to happen in phases, right? The focus right now is making sure we can get bottled water out, but also we're providing temporary measures to help increase the water pressure so people can at least flush their toilets and use the faucets. The longer term and the midterm about how long it's going to take to actually make it safe to drink, I think that we have a lot more to learn about what it's going to take to get that plant up and running.
Jackson's water problems didn't begin with the flooding that damaged the treatment plant. A boil water notice had already been in place for several weeks due to poor quality, an issue many locals say they've long become used to. And last year, the city lost water for a month after a harsh winter storm. Carly Acuno is the Executive Director of Cooperation Jackson, one of a number of organisations working to help people in need. He's not surprised by the current situation, pointing to decades of underinvestment in critical infrastructure.
Well, to be real and plain and simple with the audience, it's racism. Jackson is a majority black city. It's been a majority black city since the 1980s. And when the as a result of, you know, white flight, which has started to happen in the 60s when this transition began, there was intentional capital flight that went with the white flight. And there's just been no fundamental repair to the system since then.
The crisis has heightened existing political divisions, with the city's Democratic mayor and the state's Republican governor arguing over who's responsible. But as residents help each other to distribute bottled water, they're just hoping the spotlight on their community will finally lead to much-needed spending.
North America correspondent Jade McMillan, and that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Today, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. He's leaving against his wishes, but Boris Johnson's reign as the British leader has come to an end. Today, chief political commentator for the independent newspaper, John Rentall, on Boris's chequered legacy, the challenges for his Downing Street successor. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.